clothed in soft, pale flesh, and he held his fingers apart, and his hands were soft as a woman's with his fat, the nails long and white, and the palms pink and soft and thick. When Wang the Third saw all this, he turned his eyes away again, and he said in contempt, "If I told you, you would not understand. It is enough if I say I must return quickly, for there are those who wait for me to lead them. It is enough if I say I have men under my command ready to do my bidding."
"And are you paid well for it?" asked Wang the eldest, wondering and not perceiving his brother's scorn, since he held himself to be a goodly man.
"Sometimes I am, and sometimes I am not," said the soldier. But Wang the eldest could not think of anyone's doing a thing for which he was not paid, and so he said on,
"It is a strange business which does not pay its men. If a general commanded me and paid me nothing, I would change to another general if I were a soldier like you, and a captain with men under me."
But the soldier did not answer. He had a thing in his mind to do before he left, and he went and found his second brother, and he said to him privately, "You are not to forget to pay that younger lady of my father's her full share. Before you send me my silver, take the extra 5 pieces every month out of it."
The second brother opened his narrow eyes at this, and since he was one who did not easily understand the giving away of such sums, he said,
"Why do you give her so much?"
The soldier replied in some strange haste,
"She has that fool to care for, too."
And he seemed to have more to say, but he would not say it. And while his 4 soldiers tied his possessions together in a bundle, he was very restless. He was so restless he walked out to the city gate, and he looked out toward where his father's lands had lain, and where the earthen house was that was his own now, for all he did not want it, and he muttered once,
"I might go and see it once, since it is mine."
But he took his breath deeply again, and he shook his head, and he went back to the townhouse. Then he led out his 4 men, and he went quickly, and he was glad to be gone, as though there were some power over him here yet from his old father, and he was one who would have no power over him of any kind. So too did the other 2 sons yearn also to be free of their father. The eldest son longed to have the 3 years of mourning passed, and he longed to put the old man's tablet away into the little loft over the great hall where the other tablets were kept, because so long as it stood where it did every day in the hall, it seemed as though Wang Lung were watching these sons of his. Yes, there his spirit was, seated in the tablet, watching his sons, and his eldest son longed to be free to live for his pleasure and to spend his father's money as he would. But he could not, so long as that tablet was there, put his hand freely into his girdle and take his pleasure where he would. And there were these years of mourning to be passed, when it is not decent for a son to be too merry. Thus upon this idle man, whose mind was ever running upon secret pleasures, the old man still laid his restraining power. As for the second son, he had his schemes too, and he longed to turn certain of the fields into money, because he had a plan to enlarge his grain business and buy over some of the markets of Liu the merchant, who grew old and whose son was a scholar and did not love his father's shops. And with so large a business, Wang the Second could ship grain out of that region, and even to foreign countries nearby. But it is scarcely seemly to do such great things while mourning is yet going on, and so Wang the Second could but possess himself in patience and wait, and say little except to ask his brother, as though idly,
"When these days of mourning are over, what will you do with your land? Sell it or what?"
And the elder brother replied with seeming carelessness,
"Well, I do not know yet, I have scarcely thought, but I suppose I must keep enough to feed us, seeing I have no business as you have, and at my age I can scarcely begin a new thing."
"But land will be a trouble to you," said his brother. "If you are a landlord, you must see to the tenants, and you must go yourself to weigh out grain, and there are many very wearisome such things for a landlord to do if he is to make his living at all. As for me, I did these things for my father, but I cannot do them for you, for I have my own affairs now. I shall sell all but the very best land, and invest the silver at high interest, and we will see who will get rich the more quickly, you or I."
Now Wang the eldest heard this with the greatest envy, for he knew he needed a great deal of money, and more than he had, and he said weakly,
"Well, I shall see. Then it may be I will sell more than I thought I would, perhaps, and put the money out at interest with yours. But we shall see."
But without knowing it, when they talked of selling the land, they dropped their voices low, as though they were afraid the old man in the land might hear them still. Thus these two waited with impatience for the 3 years to be over, and Lotus waited too, and grumbled as she waited, because it was not fitting for her to wear silk these 3 years, and she must wear her mourning faithfully, and she groaned because she was so weary of the cotton things she wore, and she could not go out to feasts and be merry with her friends except secretly, for Lotus in her age had begun to make merry with some 5 or 6 old ladies in other well-to-do houses, and these old ladies went about in their sedans from this house to that, to game and to feast and to gossip. None of them had any cares now that they could not bear children any more, and if their lords lived, they had turned to younger women. Among these old ladies, Lotus complained often of Wang Lung, and she said,
"I gave that man the best of my youth, and Cuckoo will tell you how great a beauty I was, so that you may know it is true, and I gave it all to him. I lived in his old earthen house and never saw the town until he was rich enough to come here and to buy this house. And I did not complain, no. I held myself ready for his pleasure at any moment, and yet all this was not enough for him. As soon as I was old at all, he took to himself a slave of my own, a poor pale thing I kept out of pity, for she was so weak she was little use to me, and now that he is dead I have only these few paltry bits of silver for my pains."
Then this old lady or that would commiserate her, and each pretended she did not know that Lotus had been only a singing girl out of a tea-house, and one would cry out,
"Ah, so it is with all men, and as soon as our beauty is gone they look about for another, even though they used our beauty heedlessly until it was gone. So it is with us all."
And they all agreed upon these two things, that all men were wicked and selfish, and they themselves were most to be pitied of all women, because they had sacrificed themselves so wholly. And when they were agreed upon these things, and each had shown how her lord was the worst, they fell with relish to their eating, and then with zest to their gaming. And so Lotus spent her life. And since it is a servant's due to have what her mistress earns at gaming, or else a share in it, Cuckoo was zealous to urge her on to such a life. But still Lotus longed for the days of her mourning to be over, so she could take off her cotton robes and wear silks again, and forget that Wang Lung had lived. Yes, except for the certain times when she must for decency's sake go to his grave and weep, and when the family went to burn paper and incense to his shade, she did not think of him except when she must draw on these mourning robes in the morning, and take them off at night, and she longed to be rid of these, so she need not think of him at all. There was only Pear Blossom, who was in no haste, and she went as she always did, and mourned by that grave in the land. When no one was by to see her, she went and mourned there. Now while the two brothers waited, they must live on together in this great house, they and their wives and children, and it was not easy living because of the hostility of their wives to each other. The wives of Wang the eldest and Wang the second hated each other so heartily that the two men were distracted by them, for the two women could not keep their anger to themselves, but each must pour it forth to her husband when she had him alone. The wife of Wang the eldest said to him in her proper pompous way, "It is a strange thing I can never have the decent respect which is my due in this house to which you brought me. I thought while the old man lived I must endure it because he was so coarse and ignorant a person that I was shamed before my sons when they saw what they had for a grandfather. Yet I bore it all because it was right for me so to do. But now he is dead, and you are head of the family, and if he did not see what your brother's wife is and how she treats me, and he did not see it because he was so ignorant and unlearned, you are the head, and you see it, and still you do nothing to teach that woman her place. I am set at naught by her every day, a coarse country woman, and irreligious, too." Then Wang the eldest groaned in himself, and he said, with what patience he could muster,
"What did she say to you?"
"It is not only in what she says," the lady replied in her chill way, and when she talked her lips scarcely moved and her voice did not rise or fall.
"It is in all she does and is. When I come into a room where she is, she pretends to be at some task from which she cannot rise and give me place, and she is so red and loud I cannot bear her if she speaks at all. No, not even if I see her pass, even."
"Well, and I can scarcely go to my brother and say, 'Your wife is too red and too loud, and the mother of my sons will not have her so,'" replied Wang the eldest, wagging his head and feeling for his tobacco pipe and the girdle under his robe. He felt he had said a very good thing, and he dared to smile a little.
Now the lady was not one who was ever quick to answer, and the truth was she could not answer many times as quickly as she longed to do. And one reason she hated her sister-in-law was because the country wife had a sharp, witty tongue, although it was coarse, too. And before the townswoman could finish a speech she set out to make slowly and with dignity, the country wife had, with some roll of her eyes and with some quick word interspersed, put to naught the townswoman and made her seem absurd, so that when the slaves and servants who stood by heard it, they had to turn away quickly to hide their smiles. But sometimes a young maid turned too late, and her laughter burst out of her with a great squeak before she could stop herself, and then others must needs laugh as though at the noise she made, and the townswoman was so angry she hated the country wife with all her heart. So when Wang the eldest said what he did, she looked at him sharply to see if he made sport of her too. And there he sat in a reed chair he had for his ease, and there he was smiling his soft smile. And she drew herself up very hard, and she sat erect and chill upon the stiff wooden chair she always chose. And she dropped her lids over her eyes and made her mouth very small and tight, and she said, "I know very well you despise me too, my lord. Ever since you brought home that common creature you have despised me, and I wish I had never left my father's house. Yes, and I wish now I could give myself to the gods and enter myself a nun somewhere, and so I would if it were not for my children. I have given myself to building up this house of yours to make it more than a mere farmer's house, but you give me no thanks." She wiped her eyes with her sleeves carefully as she said this, and she rose and went into her room, and soon Wang the eldest heard her reciting aloud some Buddhist prayer. For this lady of late years had recourse to nuns and to priests, and she had grown very scrupulous in her duty to the gods, and she spent much time in prayers and chants, and the nuns often came to teach her. She made a parade, too, of being able to eat but a very little meat, although she had not taken the strict vows, and she did all this in a rich man's house, where there is no need for such worship, as a poor man must give to the gods for safety's sake. So now, as she always did when she was angered, she began to pray aloud in her room, and when Wang the eldest heard it, he rubbed his hands ruefully over his head, and he sighed. For it was true this lady of his had never forgiven him, that he had come to the taking of a second woman into his house. A pretty, simple girl he saw on the street one day at a poor man's door. She had sat on a little stool beside a tub washing clothes, and she was so young and pretty, he looked at her twice and thrice as he passed, and he passed again and again. Her father was glad enough to let her go to so goodly a rich man, and Wang the eldest paid him well. But she was so simple that now he knew all she was, Wang the eldest did sometimes wonder how it was he had longed for her as he had. For she was so simple that she feared his lady very much, and had no temper at all of her own. And sometimes, when Wang the eldest called for her to come to his room at night, she even hung her head and faltered, "But will my lady let me tonight?" And sometimes, when he saw how timid she was, Wang the eldest grew angry and vowed he would take a good, robust, ill-tempered wench next, who would not fear his lady as they all did. But sometimes he groaned and thought to himself that after all it was better so, because at least he had peace between his two women, seeing that the younger one obeyed her mistress abjectly, and would not so much as look at him if the lady were by. Nevertheless, although this somewhat satisfied the lady, still she never ceased to reproach Wang the eldest, first that he had taken any other woman at all, and then, if he must, that he had taken so poor a thing. As for Wang the eldest, he bore with his lady, and he loved the girl still sometimes for her pretty childish face, and he seemed to love her most whenever his lady spoke most bitterly against her, so that he managed by stealth and by schemes to get the girl who was his own. He would answer when she feared to come to him, "You may come freely, for she is too weary to be troubled by me tonight." It was true enough that his lady was a woman of a chill heart, and she was glad when her days of childbearing were over. Then Wang the eldest gave her the respect that was her due, and he deferred to her by day in everything, and so did the girl. But by night the girl came to him, and so he had peace with his two wives in his house. Still, the quarrel with the sister-in-law was not so easily settled, and the wife of Wang the second was at her husband too, and she said, "I am sick to death of that white-faced thing who is your brother's wife, and if you do not do something to separate our courts from theirs, I shall take my revenge one day and bawl in the streets against her, and that will make her die of shame, she is so puling and so fearful, lest one does not bow deep enough every time she comes in. I am as good as she and better, and I am glad I am not like her and that you are not like that great fat fool, even though he be the elder brother over you." Now Wang the Second and his wife agreed very well. He was small and yellow and quiet, and he liked her because she was ruddy and large and had a lusty heart, and he liked her because she was shrewd and a good wife in the house, and she spent money hardly, and although her father had been a farmer and she was never used to fine living, now that she could have it, she did not crave it as some women would have. She ate coarse food by choice and wore cotton rather than silk, and her only faults were a tongue too ready for gossip, and that she liked to chatter with the servants. It was true she could never be called a lady since she liked to wash and to rub and work with her own hands. Yet since she was so, she did not need so many servants, and she had only a country maid or two whom she treated as friends. And this was another thing her sister-in-law held against her, that she could not treat a servant properly but must look on them all as her equals, and so bring the family to shame. For servants talk to servants, and the elder wife had heard the maids and her sister-in-law's boast about their mistress, and how much more generous she was than the other, and how she gave them bits of dainties left over and bits of stuffs for shoes, if she were in such a mood. It was true the lady was hard with her servants, but so she was with all, and she was hard with herself, too, and she never came forth as the other one did, who ran anywhere with her garments faded and worn, and her hair awry, and her shoes soiled and turned under at the heel, although her feet were none too small either. Neither had the lady ever sat as the country wife did, who suckled her child where she sat or stood, with her bosom all out. Indeed, the greatest quarrel these two ever had was because of this suckling, and the quarrel drove the two brothers at last to find a way of peace. It happened on a certain day that the lady went to the gate to enter her sedan, for it was the birthday of a god who had a temple in the town, and she went to make an offering. As she passed into the street, there was the country wife at the gate with her bosom all bare like a slave's, and she was suckling her youngest child and talking to a vendor from whom she had bought a fish for the noon meal of the day. It was a hideous, coarse sight, and the lady could not bear it, and she set herself to reproach her sister-in-law bitterly, and she began, "Truly, it is a very shameful sight to see one who should be lady in a great house do such a thing as I would scarcely allow a slave of mine." But her slow and sedate tongue could not match the other's, and the country wife shouted out, "Who does not know that children must be suckled? And I am not ashamed I have sons to suckle and two breasts to suckle them at." And instead of buttoning her coat decently, she shifted her child triumphantly and suckled it at her other breast. Then, hearing her loud voice, a crowd began to gather to see the fray, and women ran out of their kitchens and out of their courts, wiping their hands as they ran, and farmers who passed set their baskets down a while to enjoy the quarrel. But when the lady saw these brown and common faces, she could not bear it, and she sent the sedan away for the day and tottered into her own courts, all her pleasure spoiled. Now the country wife had never seen such squeamishness as this, for she had always seen children suckled wherever their mothers happened to be. For who can say when a child will cry for this and that, and the breast is the only way it will be quieted? So she stood and abused her sister-in-law in such merry ways that the crowd roared with laughter, and she was in high good humor at the play. Then a slave of the ladies who stood by, curious, went and told her mistress faithfully all that the country wife said, and she whispered, "Lady, she says you are so high that you make my lord go in terror for his life, and he does not even dare to love his little concubine unless you say he may, and then only so long as you say," and all the crowd laughed. The lady turned pale at this, and she sat down suddenly on a chair beside the table in the chief room, and waited, and the slave ran and came back again and said breathlessly, "Now she is saying you care more for priests and nuns than you do for your children, and it is well known that such as they are for secret evil." At such vileness as this, the lady rose and she could not bear it, and she told the slave she was to command the gateman to come to her at once. So the slave ran out again in pleasure and excitement, for it was not every day there was such an ado as this, and she brought the gateman in. He was a gnarled old laborer who had once been on Wang Lung's land, and because he was so old and trusty and he had no son to feed him when he grew old, he had been allowed to see to the gates. He went fearful of this lady, as they all did, and he stood bowing and hanging his head before her, and she said in her majestic way,
Since my lord is at his tea-house now and knows not of all this unseemly commotion, and since his brother is not here either to control his house, I must do my duty, and I will not have the common people on the streets gaping like this at our house, and you are to shut the gates. If my sister-in-law is shut out, let her be shut out, and if she asks you who told you to shut the gates, say I did, and you must obey me."
The old man bowed again and went out speechless and did as he was commanded. Now the country wife was still there, and she enjoyed it mightily when the crowd laughed at her, and she did not see the gates closing slowly behind her until they were closed almost to a crack. Then the old gate man put his lips to the crack, and he whispered hoarsely,
"Sht, mistress!"
She turned then and saw what was happening, and she made a rush and pushed the gates and ran through, her child still at her breast, and she shrieked at the old man, "Who told you to lock me out, you old dog?" And the old man answered humbly, "The lady did, and she said I was to lock you out because she would not have such a din here at her gates. But I called to you, so you would know."
"And they are her gates, are they? And I am to be locked out of my own house, am I?"
And shrieking thus, the country wife bounced into her sister-in-law's courts. But the lady had foreseen this, and so she had gone into her own rooms and barred the door, and she had fallen to her prayers. And although the country wife knocked and beat mightily upon the door, she had no satisfaction, and all she heard was the steady, monotonous drone of prayers. Nevertheless, be sure the two brothers heard of it that night, each from his own wife. And when they met in the street the next morning on their way to the tea-house, they looked at each other wanly. And the second brother said, his face in a wry smile,
"Our wives will drive us into enmity yet, and we cannot afford to be enemies. We had better divide them. You take the courts you are in, and the gate that is upon the main street shall be your gate. I will stay in my own courts and open a gate to the side street, and that will be my gate, and so we can pursue our lives peacefully. If that third brother of ours ever comes home to live, he may have the courts where our father lived, and if the first concubine is dead, then hers where she is adjoining it." Now Wang the eldest had been told many times in the night by his lady every word of what had passed, and he was so pressed by his lady that this time he swore to her he would not be mild and yielding. No, this time he would do what was fitting for the head of the house to do, when the mistress of the house was so outraged as this by one who is her inferior and ought to pay her deference. So now when he heard what his younger brother said, he remembered how hard pressed he had been in the night, and he said feebly in reproach, "But your wife did very wrong to speak of my lady as she did before the common crowd, and it is not enough to let it pass so easily. You should beat her a time or two. I must insist you beat her a time or two." Then Wang the second let his sharp little eyes twinkle, and he coaxed his brother, and he said, "We are men, you and I, my brother, and we know what women are and how ignorant and simple the best of them are. Men cannot concern themselves in the affairs of women, and we understand each other, my elder brother, we men. It is true that my wife behaved like a fool, and she is a country woman and nothing better. Tell your lady I said so, and that I send my apologies for my wife. Apologies cost nothing. Then let us separate our women and children, and we will have peace, my brother, and we can meet in the tea-house and discuss the affairs we have together, and at home we will live separately."
But,
said Wang the eldest, stammering, for he could not think so fast and so smoothly as this. Then Wang the second was clever, and he saw immediately that his brother did not know how he was to satisfy his lady, and so he said quickly,
"See, my elder brother, say it thus to your lady. I have cut my younger brother's house off from us, and you shall never be troubled again. Thus have I punished them."
The elder brother was pleased then, and he laughed and rubbed his fat, pale hands together, and he said,
"See to it, see to it."
And Wang the second said,
"I will call masons this very day."
So each man satisfied his wife. The younger one told his wife,
"You shall not be troubled by that prudish, proud townswoman any more. I have told my elder brother I will not live under the same roof with her. No, I will be master in my own house, and we will divide ourselves. And I will not be under his heel any more, and you not at her beck and call."
And the elder one went to his lady and said in a loud voice,
"I have managed it all, and I have punished them very well. You can rest your heart. I said to my brother, I said, you shall be cut off from my house, you and your wife, and your children, and we will take the courts we have by the great gate, and you must cut a little side gate on to the alley toward the east, and your woman is not to trouble my lady any more. If that one of yours wishes to hang about at her door, suckling her children like a sow does her pigs in the street, at least it will not disgrace us. So have I done, mother of my sons, and rest yourself, for you need not see her any more.
Thus each man satisfied his wife, so that each woman thought herself triumphant and the other altogether vanquished. Then the two brothers were better friends than they had ever been, and each felt himself a very clever fellow and one who understood women. They were in high good humor with themselves and with each other, and they longed for the days of mourning to be over soon, so that they might set a day to meet at the tea-house and plan the selling of such land as they wished to sell. So the 3 years passed in this varied waiting, and the time came when the mourning for Wang Lung could be ended. A day for this was chosen from the almanac, and the name of that day had the proper letter in it for such a day, and Wang the eldest prepared everything for the rites of the release from mourning. He talked with his lady, and again she knew all that was fitting, and she told him, and he did it. The sons and the sons' wives and all who were near to Wang Lung and had worn mourning these 3 years dressed themselves in gay silks, and the women put on some hue of red. Then over these they put the hempen robes they had worn, and they went outside the great gate, as the custom was in those parts, and there a heap of spirit money in gold and silver had been made, and priests stood ready, and they lit the paper. Then by the light of the flames, they who wore mourning for Wang Lung took it off, and stood manifest in the gay robes they wore underneath. When the rites were complete, they went into the house, and each congratulated all that the days of sorrow were over. And they bowed to the new tablet that had been made for Wang Lung, for the old one was burned, and they put wine and sacrifices of cooked meats before the tablet. Now this new tablet was the permanent tablet, and it was made, as such are, of a very fine, hard wood, and it was set into a little wooden casket to hold it. When it was made and varnished with very costly varnish of black, the sons of Wang Lung searched for the most learned man in the town to inscribe it for them, with the name and the spirit of Wang Lung. There was none more learned than the son of the old Confucian scholar who had once been their teacher, a man who had gone up in his youth to the imperial examinations. True, he had failed, but still he was more learned than those who had not gone at all, and he had given all his learning to his son, and this son was a scholar too. When he was invited to so honorable a task as this, therefore, he came swinging his robes as he walked and setting his feet out as scholars do, and he wore his spectacles low upon the end of his nose. When he was come, he seated himself at the table before the tablet, having first bowed as many times as he ought to it, and then pushing back his long sleeves and pointing his brush of camel's hair, very fine and sharp, he began to write. Brush and ink slab and ink and all were new, for so they must be at such a task, and thus he inscribed. When he came to the last letter of the inscription, he paused for a time before he wrote the very end, and he waited, and closed his eyes and meditated, so that he might catch the whole spirit of Wang Lung in the last touch of the last word. And after he had meditated a while, it came to him thus, Wang Lung, whose riches of body and soul were of the earth. When he thought of this, it seemed to him that he had caught the essence of Wang Lung's being, so that his very soul would be held fast, and he dipped his brush in red and set the last stroke upon the tablet. Thus was it finished, and Wang the eldest took his father's tablet and carried it carefully in both his hands, and they all went together and set the tablet in that small upper room where the other tablets were, the tablets of the two old farmers who had been Wang Lung's father and grandfather. Here their tablets were in this rich house, and they would never have dreamed when they were alive of having tablets such as only rich people have, and if they thought at all of themselves when they would be dead, it was only to suppose their names would be written upon a bit of paper by some fellow a little learned, and pasted to the earthen wall of the house and the fields, and so stay until it wore away after a while. But when Wang Lung had moved into this townhouse, he had tablets made for his two ancestors, as though they had lived here too, although whether their spirits were there or not, no one could know. Here then was Wang Lung's tablet put also, and when his sons had done all that should be done, they shut the door and came away, and they were glad in their secret hearts. Now it was the proper time to invite guests, and to feast and to be merry, and Lotus put on robes of a bright blue flowered silk, too bright for so huge and old a creature, but no one corrected her, knowing what she was, and they all feasted. And as they feasted they laughed together and drank wine, and Wong the eldest shouted again and again, for he loved great merry gathering, "Drink to the bottom of your cups, let the bottom be seen!" And he drank so often that the dark red came up from the wine in him and flushed his cheeks and eyes. Then his lady, who was apart with the women in another court, heard he was about to be drunken, and she sent her maid out to him to say, "It is scarcely seemly to be drunken yet, and at such a feast as this." So he recalled himself. But even Wong the Second was cheerful this day, and did not begrudge anything. He took opportunity to speak secretly with some of the guests to see if any wished to buy more land than he had, and he spread it about here and there secretly that he had some good land to part with. And thus the day passed, and each brother was satisfied because he broke the bond under which he had been to the old man who lay in the earth. There was one who did not feast among them, and Pear Blossom sent her excuse, saying, "The one I care for is a little less well than usual, and I beg to be excused." So, since no one missed her, Wong the eldest sent word she was to be excused, if she liked, from the feasting, and she alone did not take off her mourning that day, nor the white shoes she wore, nor the white cord that bound her hair where it was coiled. Neither did she take these signs of sadness from the fool, either. While the others feasted, she did what she loved to do. She took the fool by the hand and led her to Wang Lung's grave, and they sat down. Then, while the fool played, content to be near the one who cared for her, Pear Blossom sat and looked over the land, and there it was spread in its small green fields laid edgewise and crosswise, and fitted into each other for as many miles as her eyes could reach. Here and there a spot of blue stood or moved, where some farmer bent over his spring wheat. So had Wang Lung once bent also over the fruit of his earth, when it had been his turn to have it for his own. And Pear Blossom remembered how in his old age he had dwelled on those years before she was born, and how he loved to tell her of them, and of how he had been used to plow this field and plant that one. So did this time pass, and so did this day pass for the family of Wang Lung. But his third son did not come home even for such a day. No, wherever he was, he remained there, and he busied himself in some life of his own and apart from them all. Chapter 5. Now as the branches of some great old tree spring out from the stout trunk and strain away from that trunk and from each other, straining and spreading each upon its own way, although their root is the same, so it was with the three sons of Wang Lung. And the strongest and most willful of the three was Wang the Third, Wang Lung's youngest son, who was a soldier in a southern province. On the day when Wang the Third had received the news that his father lay dying, he was standing in front of a temple outside the city where his general lived, for there was a piece of bare ground before that temple, and he marched his soldiers to and fro, and he taught them feints and postures of war. So he was doing when his brother's messenger came running and panting and breathless with the importance of the message he bore, gasped forth, "Sir, and our third young lord, your father, the old lord, lies dying." Now Wang the Third had had no dealing with his father at all since the day he had run away from home in a mighty fit of anger, because his father took him into his own court when he was already a very old man, a certain young maid who had been reared in the house, who was Pear Blossom. And Wang the Third had not known he loved her until he heard what his father had done. That same night he ran into his father's court, for he had brooded the whole day since he heard, and he was so surcharged with his brooding that he dashed into the room where his father sat with the maid. Yes, he dashed into that room out of the hot darkness of a summer's night, and there she sat, still and pale, and he knew surely he could have loved her. Then such a sea of anger rose in him against his father that he could not bound it, for he was given to anger, and he knew if he stayed to let it swell it must have burst his heart. And he flung himself out of his father's house that very night, and because he had always longed to adventure forth and to be a hero under some banner of war, he spent the silver he had by him, and went south as far as he could, and took service under a general famous at that time in a rebellion. And Wang the Third was so tall and strong and fierce a youth, and his face so dark and angry, and his lips hard and pressed over his great white teeth, that the general had marked him at once and wanted him near himself. And he had raised Wang the Third up very quickly, and much more quickly than usual. This was partly because he was so silent and changeless a young man that the general came to trust him, and partly because Wang the Third had such a fierce and angry temper that when it was roused he did not fear to kill nor to risk being killed, and there are not many men so brave as this to be hired. Besides this, there was a war, too, and war is a time when soldiers may rise rapidly, and so it was with Wang the Third, for as men above him were killed or displaced, the general gave him higher and higher office, until from a common soldier he had risen him to be a captain over many men, and so he had been when he set out for his father's house. When Wang the Third heard what the messenger had to say, he sent his men away, and he walked alone over the fields, and the messenger walked a distance behind him. It was a day in early spring, such a day as his father Wang Lung had been used to stir himself and go out and look over his land, and on such a day he would take his hoe and turn over the earth between the rows of his wheat. There, although there were no signs of new life to any other eye than his, to his eye there was a swelling and a change, the promise of a new harvest out of the earth. Now he was dead, and Wang the Third could not imagine death on such a day. For in his own way did Wang the Third feel the spring also. Where his father had gone out restless to his land, Wang the Third grew restless too, and every spring he turned his mind to a plan he had, and it was to leave the old general and set out upon a war of his own, and entice such men as would to come under the banner he would set up for himself. Every spring it seemed to him a thing he could do, and at last a thing that he must do. And as year after year he planned how he could do it, it grew into his dream and his ambition. And so great had it grown that in this very spring he had said to himself he must set out on it, and he could not any longer endure the life he led under the old general. For the truth was that Wang the Third was very bitter against the old general. When he had first come to the banner under which he served, the general was one of those who led in a rebellion against a wicked ruler, and he had been still young enough then so he could talk of revolution, and how fine a thing it was, and how all brave men must fight for a good, right cause. And he had a great rolling voice, and words slipped easily from his tongue, and he had a trick of moving men beyond what he felt himself, although those who heard him did not know this. When Wang the Third had first heard these fair words, he was very moved, for his was a simple heart, and he swore to himself he would stand by such a general as this in so good a cause, and his deep heart was filled with the purpose. It astonished him, therefore, when the rebellion was successful, and the general came back from his wars and took this rich river valley for his place to live, to see this man, who had been a hero in wars, settle himself with zest to these things he now did. And Wang the Third could not forgive him that he had forgotten himself like this, and in the strangest way it seemed to Wang the Third he had been robbed, or defrauded somehow of something, although he did not know what, either. And it was out of this bitterness the thought had first come that he would leave this general he had once served with all his heart in war, and that he would pursue alone his own path. For in these years power had passed out of the old general, and he grew idle, and he lived off the land, and went no more out to any wars. He let himself grow huge in flesh, and he ate the richest meats every day, and drank wines from foreign countries, that do eat out a man's belly, they are so fiery. And he talked no more of war, but all his talk was of how this cook had made such a sauce upon a fish caught out of the sea, and of how that cook could pepper a dish to suit a king. And when he had eaten all he could eat, then the only other game he knew was women. And he had 50 wives and more, and it was his humor to have women of every sort, so that he had even a strange woman with a very white skin and leaf-colored eyes and hair like hemp, whom he had bought for a price somewhere. But he was afraid of her, too, because she had so much discontent in her that she was festering with some bitterness, and she would mutter to herself in her own strange tongue as though she cast a spell. But still, It amused the old general, and it was a thing to boast of, that he could have such a one, even among his women. Under a general like this, the captains grew weak and careless also, and they caroused and drank and lived off the people, and all the people hated the general and his men very heartily. But the young men and the brave grew restless and stifled with inaction, and when Wang III held himself above them all and lived his plain way and would not even look at women, these young men turned to him, one after the other, this handful and that, this brotherhood and that, and they said among themselves, "Is it he who can lead us out?" And they turned their eyes to him expectantly. There was but one thing that held Wang III back from his dream now, and it was that he had no money, for after he left his father's house, he had no more except the paltry bit he received at the end of each month from the old general, and often he did not have even that, for sometimes the general had not enough to pay his own men, since he needed so much himself, and 50 women in a man's house are rapacious, and they vie with one another in their jewels and their garments, and in what they can secure by tears and coquetry out of an old man who is their lord. So it seemed to Wang III he could never do what he hoped, unless he became a robber for a while, and his men a robber band, as many like him have done. And when he had robbed for a time until he had enough, he could wait for a lucky war and make terms with some state army or other somewhere, and demand to be pardoned and received into the state again. But it was against his stomach to be a robber too, for his father had been an honest man, and not such a man as falls easily into robbery and any famine or time of war. And Wang III might have struggled on for more years yet and waited for a chance. For now he had dreamed so long that it had come to be a certainty in him that heaven itself had marked out his destiny for him, even as he dreamed, and he had but to wait until his hour came and he could seize it. The one thing which made it well nigh impossible for him to wait, for he was not a man of patient temper, was that his soul had come to loathe this southern country where he lived, and he longed to be out of it and away to his own north. He was a man of the north, and there were days when he could scarcely swallow one more time the endless white rice these southerners loved, and he longed to set his great hard white teeth into a stiff sheet of unleavened wheaten bread rolled about a garlic stalk. Yes, he made his own voice harsher and louder even than its nature was, because he hated so heartily the smooth, oiled courtesies of these southern men, who were so smooth they must be tricky, since it is against nature to be always gentle, and he thought all clever men must have hollow hearts. Yes, he scowled at them often and was angry with them often, because he longed to be in his own country again, where men grew tall as men ought to be, and not little apes as these southerners were, and where men's speech was scant and plain, and their hearts stern and straight. And because Wang III had so evil a temper, men were afraid of him, and they feared his black brows frowning, and his surly mouth, and because of these and his long white teeth, they made a nickname for him, and they called him Wang the Tiger. Often in the night in the small room he had for his own, Wang the Tiger would roll upon his hard and narrow bed, and seek for a plan and a way to do what he dreamed. Well he knew if his old father died he would have his inheritance, but his father would not die, and gnashing his teeth, Wang the Tiger muttered often into the night, "The old man will live clean through my own prime, and it will be too late for me to grow great if he does not die soon. How perverse an old man is he that he will not die!" So at last in this spring he had come to the place where, however unwilling he was to do it, yet he had made up his mind he must turn robber rather than wait on, and scarcely had he made up his mind when the news came of his father's dying. Now having this news, he walked back across the fields, his heart swelling and pounding in his bosom, because he saw the way that was set out before him clear and plain for him to follow. And it was so great a comfort he need not be a robber, that he could have shouted had he not been so silent a man by nature. Yes, far above every other thought was this. He had not been mistaken in his destiny, and with his inheritance he would have all he needed, and heaven guarded him. Yes, far above every other thought was this. Now he could take the first step out upon that upward and endless road of his destiny, for he knew he was destined to be great. But none saw this exultation upon his face. None ever saw anything upon that fierce, changeless face of his. His mother had given to him her steadfast eye, and her firm mouth, and her look of something rock-like in the very substance of which his flesh was made. He said nothing, therefore, but he went to his room and prepared himself for the long journey north, and he told off 4 trusty men whom he commanded to come with him. When his scanty preparations were made, he marched to the great old house in that city which the general had taken for his own use, and he sent a guard in to announce him, and the guard came back and called out that he was to enter. Then Wong the Tiger marched in, bidding his men wait at the door, and he went into the room where the old general sat finishing his noon meal. The old man sat crouching over his food as he ate, and 2 of his wives stood to serve him. He was unwashed and unshaven, and his coat was loose upon him and not buttoned, for he loved now as he grew old to go unwashed and unshaven, and careless of his looks as he had when he was young. For he had been in his day a very low and common working man, except that he would not work and fell to robbery, and then he rose out of robbery at a turn of some war or other. But he was a genial, merry old man, too, very reckless in all he said. And he always welcomed Wong the Tiger, and respected him because he did those things he was too indolent to do himself now in his fat old age. So now when Wong the Tiger came in and made his obeisance and said, "One came today to say my father is dying, and my brothers wait for me to come to bury him." The old general leaned back easily and said, "Go now, my son. Do your duty to your father, then come back to me." Then he fumbled in his girdle, and wrenched at it, and brought out a handful of money, and he said, "Here is largesse for you, and do not deal too hardly with yourself on your travels." And he leaned far back in his chair, and called out suddenly he had something in a hollow tooth, and one of his wives plucked a long, slender pin from her hair and gave it to him, and he busied himself and forgot Wong the Tiger. So had Wong the Tiger gone back to his father's house, and with his impatience seething in him, he waited until the inheritance was divided, and he could hasten away again. But he would not set out upon his plan until the years of mourning were over. No, he was a scrupulous man, and he chose his duty to do it if he could, and he waited, therefore. But it was easy for him to wait now, for his dream was sure at last, and he spent the 3 years in perfecting every means and in saving his silver, and in choosing and watching what men he hoped would follow him. Of his father he thought no more, since he had what he needed, except as the branch may think of the trunk from which it sprang. Wong the Tiger had no more thought of his father than that, for he was a man whose usual thoughts ran deep and narrow, and there was room in him for only one thing at a time, and in his heart space but for one person. That person now was himself, and he had no dream except his one dream. Yet that dream had enlarged itself this much. In those days when he was idle in his brother's courts, he saw something his brothers had that he had not, and he envied them this one possession. He did not envy them their women, nor their houses, nor goods, nor all the prosperous airs they had, nor the bows men gave them everywhere. No, he envied them only this, and it was the sons they had. He stared at all those lads of his brothers, and he watched them as they played and quarreled and clamored. And it came to him suddenly for the first time in his life that he wished he had a son of his own, too. Yes, it would be a very good thing for a lord of war to have a son of his own, for no blood is wholly loyal to a man except his own, and he wished he had a son. But when he had thought of it for a while, he put the wish away again, at least for the present, for it was not the hour now for him to pause for a woman. He had a distaste for women, and it seemed to him no woman could be aught but a hindrance to him at this beginning of his venture. Nor would he have any common woman he could leave and not count a wife, for if he took a woman for the hope of a son, he wanted true son from true wife. He put his hope away for a while then, and he let it lie in his heart and deep in the future. Chapter 6. Now while Wong the Tiger was preparing to go forth out of the south and for himself at last, there was a certain day when Wong the Second said to his elder brother, "If you have the leisure tomorrow morning, come with me to the tea-house on the Street of the Purple Stones, and let us talk together of two things." When Wang the eldest heard his brother say this, he wondered to himself, for he knew the land must be talked about, but he did not know what else, and so he said,
"I will surely come. What other thing is there to talk about?"
"I have a strange letter from that third brother of ours," replied Wang the second. "He makes us an offer for as many sons as we can spare, because he sets out on some great endeavor, and he needs men of his own blood about him, because he has no sons of his own."
"Our sons?" repeated Wang the eldest, astounded, and his great mouth ajar with his astonishment, and his eyes staring at his brother.
Wang the second nodded his head. "I do not know what he will do with them," he said, "but come tomorrow and we will talk." And he made as though to pass on his way, for he had stopped his brother upon the street as he came back from his grain market. But Wang the eldest could not finish with anything so quickly, and he had always time and to spare for anything that came up, and so he said, being in a mood to be merry these days, now that he had come into his own,
"It is easy enough for a man to have sons of his own. We must find him a wife, brother."
And he narrowed his two eyes and made his face sly, as though he were about to say a good piece of wit. But Wang the second, seeing this, smiled a very little, and he said in his wintry way, "We are not all so easy with women as you are, elder brother." And he walked on as he spoke, for he was not minded to let Wang the eldest begin upon his loose talk now, when they stood there in the street, and people passing to and fro ready to stop and listen to any tale. The next morning, therefore, the two brothers met at the tea-house, and they found a table in a corner where they might look out and see anything there was to be seen, but where men could not easily hear what they had to say to each other. And there they took their places, and Wang the eldest sat in the inner seat, which was the higher place and his own by right. Then he shouted for the serving-man of that house, and when he came Wang the eldest ordered this and that of food, some sweet hot cakes and some light sorts of salty meat, such as men eat in the morning to tempt their stomachs, and a jug of hot wine and some other meats that men eat to send the wine down, so that his heat will not rise and they be drunken early in the day. And he ordered on of such things as struck his fancy, for he was a man who loved good food. Wang the second sat and listened, and at last he fidgeted in his seat and was in an agony, for he did not know whether or not he would have to pay his share of all this, and at last he called out sharply, "If all these meats and foods are for me, brother, then I will not have them, because I am an abstemious man, and my appetite is small, and especially in the mornings." But Wang the eldest said largely,
"You are my guest for today, and you need not mind, for I will pay."
So he set his brother at rest, and when the meats were come, Wang the second did his best to eat all he could, seeing he was a guest, for it was a trick of his he could not keep from, that although he had plenty of money he could not keep from saving all he could, and especially if it was something for which he had not paid anything. Where other men gave their old garments and any unwanted thing to servants, he could not bear to do it, but must take them secretly to a pawn-shop keeper and get a little out of it. So when he was a guest he must needs stuff himself as best he could, although he was a spare man with a lean belly. But he forced himself and ate all he could so that he was not hungry for a day or two afterward, and it was strange, for he did not need to do it either. Yet so he did this morning, and while the brothers ate they did not talk at all, but ate on, and when they waited for the servant to bring a new dish they sat in silence, and looked about the room where they sat. For it is a thing very ill for a man's appetite if he begin to discuss some matter of business while he eats, and it closes his stomach against its food. Now, although they did not know it, this was the very tea-house to which their father Wang Lung had once come, and where he had found Lotus, the singing girl whom he took for his concubine. To Wang Lung it had seemed a place of wonder, and a magic and beautiful house with its paintings of pretty women on silken scrolls hung upon the walls. But to these two sons of his it was a very usual place, and they never dreamed of what it had been to their father, or how he had come in timidly and half-ashamed as a farmer among townsmen. No, the two sons sat here in their silken robes, and they looked about them at their ease, and men knew who they were, and made haste to rise and bow to them if the brothers looked their way. And servants made haste to wait on them, and the master of the house came himself with the serving-man, who carried the jugs of heated wine, and he said, "This wine is from jars newly opened, and I broke their clay seals with my own hand for you, sirs." and he asked again and again if all were to their liking. Yes, so it was with the sons of Wang Lung, although in a far corner there still hung that silk scroll upon which lotus was painted, a slight girl with a lotus bud in her little hand. Once Wang Lung had looked at it with his heart beating hard in his bosom, and his mind all confusion. But now he was gone, and lotus was what she was, and the scroll hung here grimed with smoke and specked with flies' filth, and no one ever looked at it or thought to ask, "Who is that beauty hanging hidden in the corner?" No, and these two men who were Wang Lung's sons never dreamed it was lotus or that she could ever have looked like that. They sat here now, respected of all, and ate on, and although Wang the Second did his best yet, he could not keep up eating so long as his elder brother did. For when Wang the Second had eaten all and more than he could, Wang the eldest ate on robustly, and he drank his wine and smacked his full lips over its flavor, and ate again until the sweat stood out on him, and his face was as though it had been oiled. Then, when even he had done the best he could, he sat back in his seat, and the serving man brought towels wrung out of boiling water. And the two men wiped their heads and necks and hands and arms, and the serving man took away the broken meats that were left and the dregs of wine. And he wiped the bones and bits of food from the table, and he brought fresh green tea, and so the two men were ready to talk together. By now it was mid-morning, and the house was filled with men like themselves, who had come out of their homes to eat in peace away from their women and children, and having eaten to talk with friends and sup tea together and to hear the latest news. For there can be no peace for any man in his house where women and children are, since women shriek and call, and children are bawling and weeping, for so their nature is. But here in this house it was a peaceful place, with the busy hum of men's voices rising everywhere in good talk. In the midst of all this peace, then, Wang the Second drew a letter out of his narrow bosom, and he drew the paper from the envelope and laid it upon the table before his brother. Wang the eldest took it up, and he cleared his throat and coughed loudly, and he read it, muttering the letters to himself as he read. When the scanty words of common greeting were written, Wang the Tiger wrote on, and his letters looked like him because they were straight and black, and he brushed them boldly upon the paper. "Send me every ounce of silver you can, for I need all. If you will lend me silver, I will repay it at a high interest on the day when I achieve what I set out to do. If you have sons over 17, send them to me also. I will raise them up and raise them higher than you dream, for I need men of my own blood about me that I can trust in my great venture. Send me the silver and send me your sons, since I have no son of my own." Wang the eldest read these words, and he looked at his brother, and his brother looked at him. Then Wang the eldest said, wondering, "Did he ever tell you at all what he did beyond that he was in an army with some southern general? It is strange he does not tell us what he will do with our sons. Men do not have sons to cast out like that into something they do not know." They sat for a while in silence and drank their tea, and each thought with doubt that it was a wild thing to send sons out not knowing where, and yet each thought jealously of the words, "I will raise your sons high." And each thought to himself that since he had a son or two old enough, he might after all spare a son on the chance. Then Wang the Second said cautiously, "You have sons who are more than 17? And Wang the eldest answered, "Yes, I have 2 over 17, and I could send the second son. And I have not thought what I would do with any of them. They grow up so easily in a house like mine. The eldest must not go out, since he is next to me in the family, but I could send the second one." Then Wang the Second said, "My eldest is a girl, and the one after her is a son, and that one could go, I suppose, since your eldest son is at home to carry on the name." Each man sat and mused over his children then, and thought what he had and what their lives could be to him. Wang the eldest had 6 children by his lady, but of these 2 were dead in childhood, and he had 1 by his concubine. But his concubine was ripe to give birth again in a month or two, and of these children he had every one was sound, except the 3rd son, whom a slave had dropped when he was but a few months old, so that his back grew twisted in a knot on his shoulders, and his head was too large for him, and it set into his knot like a turtle's head into its shell. Wang the eldest had called a doctor or two to see it.